Rock Fight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and today we are back with another piece of gear, another beer. That's right, it's your weekly dose of gear and beer. With me, as always, is Justin Hausman. What's up, Justin?
Just got back from a run.
He's just sweating. Dude, you're sweating.
Just got back from a run. Oh, man. That was just like 15 miles, you know.
You must have been really hammering it out
45,000 feet of elevation.
Today we'll be reviewing a piece of gear the way you would expect gear to be reviewed on the Rock Fight. We don't talk about Stackite. Actually, today we might talk about Stackite. Geometry or width underfoot. We talk about the experience, the likes and dislikes. And because we're the only gear review show that actually cares about the world, we'll rank each product on the Stuffometer, a scale where the best score means humanity and society would actually be losing something if this thing went away. And the worst score means that this thing, regardless of performance and just like Puffin drinkware, probably shouldn't exist in the first place. You wanna pitch Puffin again? Or are you good on them this week?
I think we're good.
Okay. And because Justin is the official Cicero not just of the Rock Fight, but of the entire outdoor community, we will then follow up the gear review with the perfect post-activity beer pairing. Don't know what a Cicerone is? Justin, what is a Cicerone?
It's a term I made up about a month ago for the podcast.
That'd be amazing if you've been like fooling me this entire time.
Just the long gone. Really?
No, I can't think I did. But anyway. So what is a Cicerone?
Just a beer expert.
Yeah. Certified. Just a proven.
Certified.
In court.
Had to take a test.
Had to
take a big old test.
How long did it take?
The test itself? I don't know. 3 hours. But it was like a year of studying for it. It was a big deal.
So the bottom line is here, you'll get the pairings that matter most, gear and beer. All right, Justin, what are we reviewing today?
Well, as you can tell from my breathless entrance, I've been doing some trail running lately. And so it's 2024. You have to have Hokas, right? Like if you're going to get into trail running, like what else are you going to go with?
And you're a dad.
And I live in Marin County. There's actually, There's an Instagram account. This is actually pretty. This is worth sharing to the listeners out there. There's an Instagram account called Marin Dad, and it's very inside baseball. Like you would have to know Marin, and you'd have to know the kind of people who moved here recently from San Francisco to really like get it. but it's a guy. He's probably like in his mid-40s. I'm assuming he's a dad. He kind of looks like me, sort of. And most of it is like him, like just kind of being like a bit ridiculous about like, well, I'm a Marin dad, so I have to do X, Y, and Z, all these things that are very, again, inside baseball. But I don't really like him. I don't find it that funny, but people are constantly sending it to me, you know.
Because like, you're a Marin dad.
Kind of like the guy that's like, hey, my name's Cloudbreak, and I just learned to surf or whatever.
Matt Lyons, I think his name is.
Sure, like same deal. Yeah. I get that guy's stuff all the time too. Anyway,
well,
Marin
he's
dad,
funny though. I like some
he
of
is funny.
Stuff.
I like
yeah,
him
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Marin dad the other day does one, and first of all, he's wearing the same flannel I have, which is like a local Marin company. I'm just like, son of a bitch. But two, the whole episode is about him like trying to decide what to wear, and of course, he's going to wear Hokas, and I'm just like, God,
can't win.
Anyway, we're doing Hokas, and I think, okay, I'm going to go to their site to confirm. I've never really known, was it Hoka 1-1 or Hoka like One One?
It's One One.
And now what does that mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
I probably knew at one point. Isn't that to do with like flying? I don't know.
I guess, because isn't fly like their tagline?
I think so.
Which is actually pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I didn't really, like, I was like, okay, I'm going to get into trail running. I guess I got to try some Hokas. I hadn't really had them before. That's not true. I had one pair a long time ago, and they seemed fine. But I'm not a trail runner expert. I mean, as we've talked ad nauseum on the show, I don't really like trail runners.
Did you need to say something to your boot fans out there?
No, it's
like,
okay.
You're
it's okay.
Banning them for this episode?
No, because I was using these for their intended purpose, which is trail running. Like, I'm not hiking in them. I'm not backpacking in them. I did lock all my boots in the garage so they can't hear any of this, because I do feel like my boots are my friends.
Is that what that noise was?
Yeah. Justin, no. But yeah, so I went out and got some Hokas. I thought about some other brands, like On Running, which is huge. And I don't know if they're like really into the trail running space or just the kind of athleisure. I'm wealthy and I have athletic shoes on space. Like, I don't really know.
I'm sure they'll work if you run in them.
They might be super hardcore. I really don't know. I thought about them. I thought about Brooks. I thought about Ultras. Although, do people actually run in Ultras?
I... That's mean. Come on now.
No, I'm dead serious. Like, I think of them purely as like a through hiking shoe, but they're, I mean, that's primarily, they are a running shoe.
Oh yeah. It's a running brand. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I have those. I've had several pairs of those, but purely for trying them out as hikers. So, and I do not like how those feel on my feet. So I wasn't going to run in those. That seems like a nightmare, frankly, just because of how soft and loose I always felt in ultras. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I would not want to run in those. Anyway, picked up some Hokas. So that's what we're talking about today. Specifically the Hoka Mafate Speed 4s.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Which you have to assume there's also a Mafate Speed 3, 2, and 1. But these are the Speed 4s. They are not necessarily brand new. It looks like they've had them they've been out for at least a year. So there's probably, I'm sure they're on the way out because that's the nature of capitalism these days. I'm sure the 5 is just about here. But
it's going to be so much better.
They look like Hokas. They got a big, giant, foamy midsole. They have that weird thing that all running shoes have now, which is like that giant lip on your Achilles, which I don't know what that's for, the big flared out lip thing. You know what I'm talking about?
The Ultras always had one of those kind of coming off the bottom of your heel. It's supposed to like help stabilize you going downhill.
Up at the top. This is like it literally like where your Achilles is. Like it's almost like a tongue that's like, I don't know. I have a feeling it's so you can slip them on and off easier. That looks kind of funny.
Oh yeah. I see what you're saying. That's ease of entry.
Yeah. But that's like a big thing now. It seems like in these running shoes, but mm-hmm, I mean, they look mm-hmm. like standard Hokas, and like the things I do like about them right out of the box are pretty comfortable. They have a wide toe box, but not super wide like the Ultras, but big enough. It's like you put a pair of Hokas on, you instantly realize why like everybody wears them around just walking around. I mean, they're very, very comfortable shoes.
These look great. In terms of Hokas, I've never been a huge fan. I definitely have some Hoka experience I'll talk about later, but like just I'm looking at the picture you have on AJ's blog, and like it's a good looking shoe. I mean, like especially for considering the amount of midsole it has and all that kind of stuff, it's a good looking shoe.
Yeah, this. So I got a few pair to see which one I like the best. This one is by far the most like wearable. Some of the other ones are very much like Hoka Marshmallow Man shoes, like really giant stack. I don't know how big, but these ones are definitely the most like kind of normal looking, even though they are fairly bright.
Yeah,
but I had to pick them. They just seem like they dominate the space right now. I don't necessarily know if they do for sure sales wise, but I mean they're a $1 billion brand.
Yes, they are.
And I you know, so I couldn't really ignore them. So that's what I've gone with. I was surprised to learn that they consider themselves still a small upstart brand because they only have 440 unique styles.
That's so many shoes.
And that's men's and women's. But holy smokes. And I don't know if they consider a style to be like different colorways or actually 404. I mean, that could just be 440 SKUs. I'm not sure.
It's probably SKUs. I mean, what did you say that Nike has though?
Over 1,000.
Yeah, I mean,
that was from a New York Times article, but
yeah, we'll come back to this when we get into the stuffometer. But it's like it's kind of crazy, like how much they make.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is you go like if you go to the website and like start scouring over them. I mean, a lot of them don't really look that different. The reason that I picked these and the reason that I really like these is the Vibram sole, which to me means that okay, this is really meant for trails. And so, I mean, most of their shoes don't have that, but these do. And that was the selling point for me on these. They're $185. Is that a lot?
That's up there.
That's a lot to me. I mean,
I feel like if you get like a Brooks or kind of more sort of more established, like they're a $1 billion brand, so Hoka's established, but like more classic, I guess, or trail running shoe. Usually you're more like that 130, 140 range.
Yeah.
But 180 is a lot, but I feel like you probably are getting a little bit more for your money, I would think. They're pretty.
They feel nice. Like they seem like when you get them, you're like, okay, these are well made. Like they feel really well made. The weight feels right. The balance feels right. I mean, you know mm-hmm. how it is. Like when you have something, any kind of product, you can kind of tell right off the bat, like, okay, this feels solid. And they do. I don't think I would be that bummed. You know, like, 185 is a lot. I mean, the thing is, you can get boots for 185. You know, so like I'm trying out the new Keen Targi 4s right now, and I think they're like 180, 170, and they're like burly and gnarly. Like they're actually pretty nice. We'll talk about them later in a later episode. But that seems like a lot for a shoe that you know isn't going to last that long.
I imagine they. Projected mileage is somewhere between 350 and maybe 450 miles. I mean, usually that's kind of like, usually if you're getting 300 miles plus per pair of shoes. Like, that's pretty good.
So is that, okay, we should also mention, you know, hopefully I made it clear when I said I've been getting into trail running. We are entering a space that is, this is not where my expertise is. And Colin, I don't know if you know, but he's won many ultra marathons. Isn't that right, Colin?
Yeah. Like world champion six times in a row.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so
he knows, don't Google that, folks.
he knows a bit more than I do about the running shoe game. By the way, the thing is called a Vamp. What I was talking about, that little like,
ease on and off.
I get, yeah. So anyway, yeah, 185 seems like a lot to me, but they feel like they're worth it. I guess if you're going to spend that kind of money, you made a scrunchy face. I don't think Colin agrees, but
it's a lot of money. I mean, $200 basically once you add tax of anywhere you live. I mean, that's a lot for a running shoe. And I think that going back to the range, and I don't know, like,
that's what I was going to ask you. So that's a thing, right? Apparently. So 350, 400 miles, like is that like a known?
Well, so it's, yeah, usually people are like, yeah, everybody says, right? You can expect 300 to 500 miles. We've seen some clocking 400 miles. So generally speaking, yeah, running shoes, we'll say you can go about 300 to 500 miles in them. Now, there's also some debate around that because it all comes down to like the health of your midsole, right? It's like, how does that compress out and is it going to do what it was built to do? And there's plenty of people who will go way beyond that. I look at health of the outsole. And the thing that I think it's interesting about the Mafate having a Vibram outsole, that's my biggest beef with Ultra over the last few years and why I'm going to start looking at some different shoes as well, is I wear out the outsole real fast. And I feel like I definitely have had pairs of my Lone Peaks from Ultra that have not gotten to maybe 350 miles.
That's shockingly short lifespan to me. I mean, if you are using them, if you're an actual backpacker, like for real, and you go on like, you know, half a dozen trips a summer, I mean, that's like maybe 3 years or 4 years, right? Tops. Yeah.
I mean, and it might be different because, you know, running impact versus hiking impact. And like I said, I think some people would definitely stretch that way further than that. But
I don't think it would be that different. I mean, it's got to be a mileage thing, right? I mean, you take fewer steps while running than you do while walking. So
that's a good point.
You know, like if you do 10 miles.
And without a big pack on your back.
Exactly. I would imagine it's pretty similar. So that's a bit shocking to me. I will say that if you look at their price points, like these are the most expensive of the ones I'm just kind of like, thumbing through. So I'm guessing that probably a lot of that is the Vibram sole, I would suppose.
It definitely makes it more, for sure.
What else? They're 10 and a half ounces, roughly. I'm guessing that's a size 10. I wear a 12, so mine's going to be a little tiny bit bigger. You know, I think, I feel like, I don't know if Hokas are known for being relatively, like, shallow drops. I don't know, is it shallow? Do you use that term, shallow? Like a minimal drop?
Like the heel to toe drop?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually like in that 4 mil range.
And that's what these are, which is what I like. I know I like that. I know enough about trail running shoes to know that. I've worn some zero drops and I didn't like that. So I like a little bit. All in all, for someone who's like, okay, I'm going to give trail running a shot again after not doing it for a while, don't love the price right off the bat, but do love pretty much everything about this shoe right off the bat. That's like getting it, taking it out of the box, putting it on my foot. So far, all of that was good.
The mileage thing's interesting, and we can talk about the category a little bit too, because like for someone like yourself, it's actually, I think it's a pretty wise investment. If you want to have a pair of trail running shoes, you know, you're not going to be, you know, you're not running every day. I'm sure like it's a little bit more of a fitness add-on for you, right? So like these should last you for some time.
I would expect them to. I mean, I've had them now for a couple of months. They look pretty much the same. And I will say what's interesting is the, so Vibram Mega Grip is on a lot of stuff, and I don't know. I'm assuming that Mega Grip, I don't know if that's the compound or the pattern of the tread, but like a lot of my Danners have Vibram Mega Grip on them. So there's something unique though about these. They feel like little plastic cleats, which is interesting. So I think that I want to say they're 5 mil lugs. I think that's right, unless I'm thinking about a different shoe. They feel way more pronounced than like a hiking boot lug would. Like you feel like you're walking in cleats, and they have a tackiness to them, at least when they're new, but they still kind of do. So like if you walk around like on the street, like on pavement with them, or like on my runs, I run to the trailhead. So I'm running on about a mile of pavement before I get to the trail. And like, you can kind of feel them like wanting to grip the pavement.
I
don't know. I mean, to me, they feel solid, but I'm wondering each time I'm taking a step, am I wearing these little nubbers? Am I going to wear these into little nubs? Cause I can feel them on the ground.
Yeah, I'm looking at them now. It is pretty cool. I mean, like it is like having just a burly grip machine on the outside. Imagine like I'm like thinking about like running on like slick rock or something like that.
Well, they feel great. Yes, I wore them yesterday on a run and it was raining. And they you have a ton of one of the reasons I don't like trail runners particularly compared to boots for hiking is I don't have confidence in them that I can feel my foot moving in them and I don't want that ever. These feel pretty dang solid in the rain. Like they're really grippy. A lot, the trails are still kind of wet here from the winter and a lot of the trails I run are really hilly. And so, you know, going downhill, they you kind of just, I sit back on the heel and you can, I swear to God, you can feel the lugs gripping and you can feel them like digging in like cleats. So I like that. That's cool.
The whole maximalist thing, the kind of the thicker midsole. Yeah. This is your first time running in something like that, right?
The Hokas I had before, I don't remember what kind they were, but they were very minimalist. Because Hoka also does that, or they did.
Yeah. What do you think of that? What do you think of the thick midsole?
I like it. I like it a lot. I also had a pair of Ultras a few years back, and I can't remember what the style was.
The Olympus, maybe.
Maybe they were super minimalist.
Minimalist.
They may have been a zero drop.
They're all zero drop. Ultras zero drop. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But these ones in particular were super, super. There's like nothing to the outsole, and I hated it. I understand why somebody would like it.
Yeah,
they
weren't
for me, which is funny because I like minimalist sandals. Oddly enough. But although as I'm learning with the new Bedrocks, which I'm sure we'll get to, that I just recently got, that are a little bit thicker than the previous ones, I guess I have to admit, I do kind of like the cushion.
I got mine on the way. I'm excited.
They're nice. So, but yeah, these are my first like big foamy, you know, shoes like this. And you only have to go on one run to understand it. Well, I will say one thing that is nice in my experience testing out other trail runners as hikers, you know, I'll break, like if I'm doing that, like the Ultras, I'll run in them, you know, I'll like break into a run.
Right, just to see what their intended use is, right? Yeah, right.
And so like some of the other shoes I've had some Nike trail runners and I don't remember which ones, I didn't like them. But you can like, without the grippy outsole, I feel like the thick foam is dangerous to me, again, in trail running, because it feels like you're, move like if almost as like a delay, like you hit the ground and the foam is moving and you can kind of feel like a little delay. Again, I don't like that. The nice thing about these is those lugs grip so well that they do a really good job of balancing out the lack of feel that you have from the super cushioned midsole.
Hoka becoming this sort of ascendant brand has always been fascinating to me, because when they debuted, I mean, I first heard about them from folks I worked with who were older, who had not been running because their bodies were a little beat up.
They wanted the soft. They wanted,
and it was the
shoe.
Soft against the ground, kind of that absorption. That like, oh, this is allowing us to run again. And also, they came out right on the heels of the barefoot craze, right? And that Ultra also came out of, and Ultra was zero drop always with midsole, but then quickly also added their own maximalist version. And it's one of those like a thing where a trend or an answer to a trend with a new trend kind of also had its own place. It just was fascinating to me that like it has moved now into, you know, and I don't know if they just did a really good job with color and design that all of a sudden made it so like this is the brand that people want. And I think, I mean, I texted you or somebody, I was at an airport a few months ago and I was like, God, everyone here is wearing Hokas. And it's like, wow, really? And that's usually the marker. You can get some, you're not going to see like La Sportivas and, you know, running shoes like that in an airport typically. And if you do, you might be like, oh, cool, you're an outdoorsy person too.
Exactly.
You know?
You're going to OR.
Yeah, right. Right.
Or you're in Colorado or Alaska, which you will. But that is true. I mean, so Marin County is, it's a pretty big trail running place. I mean, the Dipsy Race, the oldest trail run in the country, is in
that
Marin County.
True.
Lots of trail runners around here, and lots of Hokas around here. Hokas, Ultras, and Brooks. That's what you will see. So yeah, I mean, they've, you know, it's even we talked about On. I don't see On nearly as much, but Hokas, yeah. And you know, it's interesting. They're all bright. Like unless you want black, there's not an option that isn't bright. Even the black is like black.
Well, the category's having a moment. I mean, it was a year ago, but Peter Vary from Footwear News is one of the first guests we had on the Rock Fight, right around the same time that you came on for the first time. And he was, I mean, it was like, that was right off of Rihanna wearing Solomons at the, you know, for the Super Bowl halftime show. And it's like the category still continues to sort of defy like what else is happening in sort of the outdoor space, trail runners and running in general. Running always tends to kind of just do well because people like to wear around running shoes. I mean.
Yeah, well, they're comfortable to walk around in.
Yeah, it's like. It's either like, no matter what your source is, you're going to see 75 or 85% of running shoes sold are never running, right?
It's funny. We should do an episode where I talk about the Keen walking shoes, which I bought probably like almost a year ago, the WK400s, and they've just come out with a WK450s. I'm not on contract with Keen anymore, so I can say whatever I want. But, they're actually great. And it's funny because you get them and you're like, why aren't there more? I mean, like, I know that there are walking shoes, but they're like geared toward like nurses or people that are on their feet all day. But nurses, I mean, as far as I know, if you're a nurse, you have to wear Asics. Have you ever noticed that? You go into a hospital and everyone's wearing Asics. But,
or Crocs.
Well, yeah. But it's interesting that there aren't more dedicated walking shoes where you're just like, well, you don't, I mean, a running shoe is built for a very specific purpose. Walking isn't the same as running.
Right.
So I'm surprised there aren't more. But I mean, I get why people wear these things around all the time. They are. They're very pleasant. They're very easy to put on. They're very comfortable. Like, I totally get it. You don't have to untie them if you don't want to. Lots to like.
The thing I just keep coming back to with the running category, and look, you can say On's coming on, there's Nike, all the numbers we're quoting about, you know, the amount of stuff being made, and this kind of maybe segues into talking about the Stuffometer. These are disposable items.
Yeah.
Right? And I did a thing on this week about ingredient brands and solving for apparel, innovation to kind of, you know, fix our apparel situation in terms of how we make stuff. I don't know of anyone who's leading on footwear because there is, you know, yeah, I can go buy right now a PFAS-laden jacket made from virgin polyester, and, like, you can tell me why, like, that's a bad product, but I also know I can probably wear it for the next, like, 30 years. And shoes, to our point, let's say you get 500 miles out of it. Let's say you get 600 miles out of it. Whatever. What do you do with it? And that's the biggest issue, I feel like, when it comes to the running category.
Do you remember a couple of years ago, Salomon tried, for all I know, it still exists. They tried to do like a subscription service with like a recycled,
take back kind of thing.
Sort of, but they actually, I think the idea, I'm fairly certain the idea was the shoes are recyclable. Like they would make them into other shoes.
Yeah.
Or
that
something.
Go?
I hadn't thought about it until I wrote an article about it. And this is the second time I've thought about it.
Right.
2 years later. I doubt it's going on. Cause I just don't think people will do that. My wife is constantly bringing home bags. There's one. It was just behind me. Maybe she took it filled with like old clothes that we can't really like. We could just donate it, or you can send it back to this company and they'll like turn it into something else.
Right.
Like there's all these things like that, but they're so hard to like wrap your head around and to use. So I don't know.
Yeah, I just don't like that there's no conversation around it. Maybe I got to pay. I'm actually having somebody who works in footwear design on the show in like a week or so. I'm going to ask him this question because I don't know. It's like this just seems like a thing where sustainability, recyclability, and then it's just like,
yeah, it's
bam,
out the window.
Not for running shoes.
Not for running shoes. Yeah. What's interesting, have you ever worn the Danner like 2650s? They're low cut. I guess, I don't know if they would call them trail. They probably just call them hiking shoes. But they're like Nubuck or suede. They probably make some in synthetics too. The first ones I had, I think I've had two pairs and they were both like Nubuck.
Yeah.
And they're super lightweight. You can run in them. I did. They last like a really long time, but they have Vibram outsoles, and again the material. I mean, they're a hiking shoe, really. I guess so. They're way more robust, but like they're perfectly fine as a running shoe. I am kind of surprised. I guess if you're serious about trail running, you're probably serious about your time, right? Like
absolutely right.
And so like you're serious about like wearing something that's like the best performing thing out there, and it's not going to be leather. It's not going to be Nubuck. It's going to be something like this. So I don't know. I mean, say a lot of things like that, like surfboards, for example, like nobody really rides eco boards, you know, like.
Yeah. How's Almond doing? Are they still around?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. But like, it's not, you know, it's like, I don't own, other than the board I made that's made out of wood. Like I don't own a board that like anybody thought anything other than here's
just
the
make a surfboard.
Most toxic shit in the world. Here we go. Put it in a surfboard. You're just like, it's just kind of, it's like. A lot of ways, my care for the environment sort of like breaks down when it comes to like if I need something to perform at a certain task, and I'm assuming that's the same thing with running shoes.
Yeah, and I know there are challenges. Like I get it, and we are past the point of no return. You're not going to say like, well, you know, we're just going to go back to TPU midsoles or whatever what was in Chuck Taylor or is in Chuck Taylor's of like pure rubber. Like I understand that's not going to happen, but then like you know, I was talking with somebody last week about Adidas made a single use marathon shoe. Literally was designed to use one time.
I got to think that like if you're a pro marathoner, aren't all your marathon shoes single use?
Probably, and I get it if you're like, hey, we're making this single use shoe for our like 100 sponsored athletes or whatever, but like, why do I need to be able to buy a single use marathon?
That would make me feel really guilty and weird. I mean, right. I would think that you could recycle all of the shit. into new shoes.
Well, this comes down to it, like when you start looking at money and you're like, well, if you just pumped a bunch of money into like, you know, solving this problem, you probably could do it. It's just no one wants to do it, right?
Yeah.
Who's gonna like, be the first one to do it?
What's the benefit?
Yeah. But well, what's the things that stack up in my house between like that I get frustrated or like that drawer full of batteries I have that like I know I'm not supposed to throw my batteries away, but I also don't like take them wherever I'm supposed to take them.
What are you supposed to do?
I guess like at your transfer station, aren't you supposed to do something there?
Where are you? Pennsylvania? What's a transfer station?
The dump.
Is that what you guys call it out there?
Isn't that what it's called officially? A transfer station?
The transfer station? Transfer from what to what?
It
doesn't go anywhere. It just sits there forever. Literally forever, it'll be there. The transfer station. That's the most optimistic name for a dump I've ever heard in my life.
I'm Googling that. I swear to God, a transfer station.
I believe you, dude, but that's not what we call it here. I'm sure that's what they're called in the East Coast.
Lame name for your dump, didn't you?
Landfill.
That is lame, actually. Just call it a dump. Come on.
I mean, yeah. Landfill sounds nicer.
All right, so let's talk about actually going out and running in the shoe. So you've not, like you said, you've not been much of a trail runner up to date. You ran a little bit in the past, but now you're kind of getting back into it from fitness point of view. Like, how was the shoe actually out on the trail?
Okay, so it's interesting that I don't like to hike in hiking or in trail runners because I like the security of a boot. But when you're running, I guess I don't care. It's like, well, I'm not going to run in boots, so like I'll accept a little bit of the. Whatever it is I don't like about the softness and pliability of a running shoe.
Yeah.
When I'm hiking in it, I'm going to accept that as a runner. The stiffness of the lugs on these, I think, alleviates a lot of that problem for me.
Okay.
To where they just feel really planted. They feel, they're confidence inspiring. 10 and a half ounces per shoe doesn't seem particularly light, but...
Yeah, but that sounds about right, though.
Okay. They feel great. They feel fine. I mean, they feel... One of the things I like about these, and I'm guessing that any high-end running shoe is going to give this sort of feeling to it, but they have a feeling of, like, propulsive like momentum. Like, you just feel like you want to take another step. And I don't know if that's... if it's the drop, if it's the way the lugs are shaped, if it's just... I don't know what it is, but, like, you know, it just feels like... You feel like you're moving. You feel like you're they make it easier to run. I mean, they really, it's just as simple as that. They make it easier to run. But
it's
I will
like a,
say that.
Like a suspension bike for trails.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of,
yeah.
You know, and like, I get it. I get what they're, it's, that's the thing too. It's like, it's one, you hike in something like this and you're like, okay, cool. I'm hiking, whatever. But when you're actually like doing what it's intended to do, you feel the benefits a lot more.
This is where like giving the running scene grief in terms of like too much stuff and we don't have a plan for recyclability or whatever. Running shoes are awesome now.
They
are
awesome.
It's incredible what we've been able to do through the design and execution of running shoes.
Yeah, like they feel great. I can run at practically full speed over like wet rock, downhill, uphill, and they just work. They just grip.
Amazing.
grip. They don't slip.
Yeah.
My feet don't get sore. I do have issues with I used to run a lot on pavement, but I had to kind of stop because I had a like random left knee pain. Just probably some kind of tendonitis or bursitis or Lord knows
cancer.
What-itis. Could be knee cancer. Yeah, runs in my family. But I don't get that with these. And I don't know if it's, I mean, obviously part of that's the trail and not running on pavement. But they just kind of make running easier. And frankly, I don't have any doubt that any other top end like hiking or trail runner would feel like that. But for if you are a noob, like me, or a reluctant trail runner like me, I couldn't be happier with the performance. I mean, just like exactly what you wanted them to do. To the point where you go, $185 is a lot. I don't know if I'll even have these in 5 years. That's a lot of money, but I kind of get it. Like they perform like they should for a shoe that costs that much. And also, trail running is fun, folks. It's
fun. Trail running rules.
It's really fun.
Does.
Like
yeah.
It's really fun. It's a great like. I wrote this in my AJ article. It's great because it's like, okay, I don't have an hour and a half, maybe. Maybe I have 30 minutes, you know, and it's like I can still get all the, you know, the joy of being on a trail.
Yeah.
It does kind of feel like flying, like especially like around here where you're like weaving through trees and like a lot of the trails are really narrow. Like it does kind of feel like you're flying. It's really fun. And I do think you get a little bit of what you get with mountain bikers where it's a bit of a suffer fest. So like, if you see someone on the trail, you're always like, hey, how's it going? You know, and like, if you're stopped for some reason, people will check up on you, you know, like there's a little bit of that aspect too, that I really enjoy. But, I get it. And I'm fortunate enough to live in a place where there's kind of endless amounts of these sorts of trails.
All right. So all right.
I'm looking forward to it.
Just, you've reached a quota for praising Marin.
Sorry. Yeah. But I mean, like, I think it's probably going to stick. I'm going to stick with it. I mean, it's pretty dang
with
fun.
With Marin? Oh, trail running. Yeah,
trail running. I don't really have a choice on the latter. Yeah. So, or the former. I always get that confused.
So let's talk about stuff. So we have running shoes, which we've talked about. There's a lot of them, and a lot of them being made, and a lot of brands. And then we have new brands coming into the scene constantly, you know. And now we have things like, what's the one up we were talking about before we hit record up in Canada? Speedland. Georgie Speedland. No, but like that's a super high end expensive pair. But that's, I'm
like,
sure
those are like $300.
They're insanely expensive. I've always been curious because they're $300. I would like to I don't even need to run. Just put one on my foot. I want to see what it feels like. Mm-hmm. So even though you have like kind of this perfect fit of what the Amafate kind of is matching up with what you would want out of a running shoe, you know, on a scale to 1 to 10, 10 being like, this thing, we can't get rid of this thing because it's awesome. 1 being like, this is completely replaceable and borderline useless. You know, where does this fall on that scale? Because even though you like the Amafates, if it went away tomorrow, you have plenty of other things to go try out.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough for me because I haven't tried that many pairs
we'll
of,
get on
of
that.
Trail runners. I should. I mean, and I always struggle with this because it's like, as a category, these should exist. But this particular SKU, you know, like, fuck, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I would be really surprised if I couldn't have the same experience with another brand. You know, I mean, like, I'm sure I like these. I like them better than Ultras. Like, I would put them higher than Ultras on this. But, like, I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean,
I think it'd be pretty easy to replace them.
Yeah. I guess it probably would, you know? So I don't know. I mean, it depends on what you like. I mean, you could, like, I want to say 5 because it's like, I'm kind of indifferent.
That sounds high.
But I knew you would say that. I'm kind of indifferent but I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they could be the best ones. I don't know. I don't even know if like trail runners like these. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I didn't really like Google like what other people have had to say. So I don't know. I mean, you could probably say 1.
Yeah.
I mean, and not be wrong.
But all right, you got to take a stand. You got to give us a number. What is it?
I'm going to say 5 just because I don't know enough. I don't
I'm
know. I mean, I don't know.
Why
enough.
Do you hate
I can't.
The environment?
Well, that's true. That's true.
I think
that's
we can make up the rules too. Like if we do another trail runner, maybe like one that you and I both try out, yeah, and then we can always be like, holy shit, these are way better. Okay, you just got knocked down to a 2. You know what I mean? But
well,
for right
maybe.
Now, 5. You know, that makes sense.
I mean, 5 because right in the middle because I don't know.
Okay, let's turn our attention to after the activity at the break, the put in the trailhead. We're going to crack open the cooler and imbibe a beverage so we can celebrate our wins and losses in the backcountry. Let's have a beer. So what are we drinking? We just finished our run. We're hot. We're sweaty. We're parched. What have we spent those last few miles knowing that this was waiting in the cooler at the car?
Well, Colin, we discussed we're not allowed to call it a beer.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right. It's a brew. Sorry. This is gear and brew today.
Mm-hmm. Gear and non-alcoholic beer. Well, yeah. It did. I could not think of a better pairing for something like a trail runner shoe, which is obviously for the fittest among us. I couldn't think of anything better than an Athletic Brewing. Now, I guess it's possible there's people out there that don't know Athletic Brewing, but they are the second biggest, but in terms of sales, non-alcoholic brewing company in the country. Heineken. Oddly enough,
oh, no kidding.
One.
Well, that makes sense.
And yeah. Heineken makes an excellent non-alcoholic beer. I will say, before I open this, crack open this bad boy, which is the Free Wave Hazy IPA, Heineken makes a pretty dang good NA. And I've said this before, probably not on this podcast, but maybe on this podcast, that I don't drink a lot of... That's not true, actually. I do drink a decent amount of NA beers because I'm always curious. But the big boys make the good ones. Like Heineken's good, Stella's really good. Budweiser still makes my favorite, the Bud Zero. So
you did say it because that's we have these because our boy Mason, I think it's Mason.
Oh, that's
Gravely.
Why.
Yeah,
yeah.
Over
that's
at
why.
Athletic Brewing, said you guys got to try this. So they've donated a few cans to the cause here.
Well, it's a cool story. I mean, they're obviously all over the outdoor community. I remember. Yeah. I think the first time I saw Athletic Brewing was, oh my God, I hadn't even thought about this. I think the first time I saw Athletic Brewing was at a Hoka event.
Get out of here.
I swear to God. Like there's a PR firm, outside PR. They're pretty big. They're based in Marin. Mm-hmm. And Gordon Wright, hey Gordon, if you're listening, put together like a Hoka trail running event, and I'm pretty sure they had Athletic there. If not, I guess it could have been another NA beer. This would have been 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
I think they're split. They're kind of bi-coastal, right? I think they are based down here, and then they started in San Diego.
They started in Connecticut.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
And they have a brewery in Connecticut, and they have one in San Diego. There's two founders. One of them was a hedge fund guy who I guess got tired of being in hedge funds, lived in New York, got into endurance running or endurance race sports and wanted something that was, you know, not beer afterward.
This is a perfect one to line it up with the Hoka. I guess
Before
we crack this, I've never tasted it. This is my first sip ever of an Athletic Brewing
really?
Beer. Yeah, I've never tried it. So as put on the Cicerone hat now, right? As the guy who knows beers, like what should we be expecting? Like let's line it up for me. We're doing it says it's hazy. And now I feel like there's always good hazies and bad hazies, right? You know, definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
Depends. Well, okay. So the thing is non-alcoholic beers usually have a kind of a funky taste because typically the way you make a non-alcoholic beer is you brew a normal beer and then you boil it. Or at least bring it up to a temperature at which ethanol boils. I don't know which is the alcohol that you're drinking when you drink booze. I don't know what that temperature is. Presumably less than water because it doesn't boil the water away. But anyway, you boil the ethanol away, which kind of changes hops don't like heat.
Right.
So that's probably part of the weird taste that you get with a beer. Like heat will destroy the taste of hops really fast. That's why you're not supposed to, that's part of the reason you're not supposed to leave beers in the sun. So that's a bit weird. So the non-alcoholic beers tend to have a flat strangeness at the back end. And I believe it's probably because they're heated so much to get the ethanol boiled off. Now, Athletic doesn't do that. They will not say how they make their brews, how they make their non-alcoholic beers.
So maybe
beers.
They do that.
Well, they say they don't. they say they figured out this hedge fund guy hired a guy who was making regular beer for a long time, and they spent apparently like 100 hours or 100 batches
trying to crack the code.
And they it's patent pending, and they say they have some it's sort of natural processes or something like that. But they say they only use hops, barley, water, and yeast. So they're not adding anything to it, but they apparently make their beers in a slightly different way. I've had a lot of Athletic Brewing. I don't think I've had the Free Wave Hazy IPA before. They still taste like non-alcoholic beers to me. I mean, people really like these. I mean, people really dig these a lot. What else is there to say?
Nothing. I think let's crack them open.
Yeah, let's crack her.
All right, you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, you ready? 3, 2. Oh, I think we're right in sync with each other.
Smells like hops. Boom, hops right off the bat.
Yeah, no, actually, that smells like a beer.
Smells like a beer. Yeah.
All right, you ready? Go. Cheers.
Mm-hmm. Cheers. Okay. Yep. There's that tea taste. Do you get that?
Yeah, there's a little tea taste.
It tastes like tea. I don't understand what that is.
Yeah, another sip here. I like it.
It's good. I mean, it's good, but there is something on the back end that reminds me of tea.
I agree with that. I get what you're saying.
There's an astringent bitterness on the back end that often get in a regular beer. What's interesting is astringency is an off flavor in beer. This is one of the things you learn in Cicerone tests. Like something happens, and I think it's with the hops that will cause like an astringent taste. And astringent is like an unpleasant bitterness. Like obviously beer is pleasantly bitter.
Right.
Astringent is like that deeply tannic, not sour, but like mouth puckering unpleasantness.
No, I'm getting that at the end.
There's a touch of that. I'm describing it that way so that people know what I'm talking about. That's not like the overwhelming thing, but there is a touch of that. And I'm wondering if that's got to be a byproduct of
however they're removing the alcohol. I'm actually surprised. So I've not drank a lot of non-alcoholic beers. I was not really anticipating liking this, I'll be honest. You know, and it's very cold because when we decided I realized I hadn't put any of these in the fridge. So about 2 hours ago, I put it like in our ice bin in the freezer. So it is ice cold.
So you want to drink these cold. That's, by the way, that's very important with non-alcoholic beers because the beer is carbonated both naturally and with forced carbonation. So typically when you brew, like if you brew at home, you don't do forced carbonation. It'll just do it itself.
Okay.
But at really big quantities when you're brewing beer. Carbonation is, of course, a natural byproduct of the fermentation cycle, but usually brewers will also pump carbonation into the beer just to make it a little bit more bubbly, just to make it uniform.
Right.
Because these aren't fermented like a regular beer, at least not to the same level. They don't produce as much carbonation, and so it's forced carbonation probably exclusively, I would guess, in non-alcoholic beers. And they lose the bubbles really fast. So like you want to drink them really cold. Like you don't want to drink them warm. I keep coming back for more taste. It's good. It is good. I don't think I would. I guess this is the highest praise you could give a non-alcoholic beer. I don't necessarily think I would. I think I would be able to tell that this was a lower calorie beer. Like it's pretty light mouthfeel. 70 calories. I mean, that's nothing.
That's pretty damn good. I like that.
I think if you just gave me this, I'd think this was just a low calorie beer. But like, right. I don't think it would occur to me it was non-alcoholic at first. I think eventually that aftertaste, I would figure it out.
But to think about, like, putting the scenario and pairing it with the gear, right? So if you and I finish a run and we have
it is really good. Actually,
yeah,
really
and
good.
Like, and you crack open the back of the car and there's an ice chest in there filled with these. You didn't think about it. Just put one in your hand, right? This would taste pretty good in that scenario.
This would taste good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would. What's interesting is in the, I was looking into this because, so like Athletic donated a few different beers to us. And I've been trying a couple of them, but not this one. But the other ones, like we have like a Radler, which is we'll talk about these later. But that's a beer that has like lemon lime soda in it, which so it kind of masks the flavor anyway. But it was interesting when I was looking into them.
Yeah,
I'd have one like at lunch, and I'd think, I feel like I had a beer.
Oh yeah, you posted about this.
Oh, I did. That's right. Yeah. And I started looking into it, and it turns out there is kind of a placebo effect where if I drink a lot of beer, and so my brain, when it tastes this, all is like, oh, it's beer time. And it just releases dopamine, which is fascinating. And so I do think that you get a little bit of the, like, I just finished a ride, I'm going to crack a beer, and it's going to be one of these. You get a little bit of the sort of relaxation that you get with a regular beer, which is pretty cool. I don't know if that is the case if you don't drink normally. Like maybe, I don't know.
Well, okay, so now we got to rate these, right? So last week we started to rate them. So Budweiser, I gave a 6.2. You gave a 7.1.
Okay.
I'm going to go with this because if I'm calling a Budweiser a 6.1, which is just like kind of Budweiser, is an all-time beer, right?
Yeah, it's a great beer.
I mean, this has got, I'm kind of, I think, I'm like a 4.9 potentially.
Oh, wow.
Here.
Okay.
Well, I can't, maybe 5.1. I'm not calling it yet, but that's kind of where the range I'm in. Where are you with this?
It's really hard to separate the alcohol from the beer. I don't mean physically. I mean, like, I hadn't really thought about this aspect. So it's a better beer than Budweiser, taste-wise. Like, I think it tastes better.
But if I lay them next to each other, I'd probably choose the Bud.
It will depend. Do you like IPAs?
I love IPAs.
I do too. I think it's a better beer. It tastes. It has more taste. It has more flavor. It's a better.
It does. It has a lot more flavor. Okay. All right. You're talking me into this. Sorry. Keep going. All right.
But I think what you're struggling with is what I'm struggling with, which is that I appreciate. And at the end of I've been kind of planning on talking about this, this whole time. But like, this tastes good. It tastes better than a Bud. I would say taste wise, it's at least an 8.
Oh wow!
The mouth feels
high
good. Honestly, yeah. I mean, really, this is so. Of the other Athletics I've tried, this is definitely my favorite.
Okay.
Which I'm kind of shocked. But I thought usually I feel like it's easier to make a non-alcoholic pilsner versus an ale because ales have a lot more like I don't know why actually it should be easier to make ales because ales have a lot more fruitiness to them, a lot more body to them. Like you can mask weird flavors with ales better. I don't know. I thought, yeah. Anyway, point is, it's better than I expected, but I drink a beer for the alcohol. I mean, you're lying to yourself if you don't. Like that's why you have it. Like I mean, like right?
Yeah, you're not wrong. Like I don't. It's a weird question for me to answer because I don't drink to get drunk anymore.
I don't either.
Right, but it is if you know. Because you're right. I'm not being fair with my 4.9 because there is a thing. I'm thinking about it in the. There's a weird mental block. I think I'm struggling with, right?
Yeah.
Because it's again, if you put same scenario, we're done running in our Hokas, and there's a cooler, and there's these sitting next to a Budweiser. I'm probably going to grab the Budweiser.
You're probably going to grab the Budweiser.
And you're right. This does taste better than a Budweiser. It does.
It tastes better, but like, I don't think there's anything. I don't think you need to beat around the bush. I think that America has a weird relationship with alcohol. We love to drink, but you're like not supposed to, and like. I have I drink a lot of beer, but I'm never really drunk. I just, you know, you get that relaxation. I mean, alcohol is a depressant. Like, you get a nice kind of mellow vibe. Right. And that's part of the charm of, like, a post-run beer. So it's tough to isolate that. Like, you know you're not going to get that from it. So at that point, I'm honestly, like, I don't know that I wouldn't just choose, like, a LaCroix.
That if like, the Waterloo LaCroix was in the cooler.
Yeah, like that, I'm like, I don't know.
I might just take that, too. Now, that being said, though, I'm really enjoying this, right? So, like, tomorrow for lunch, if I have a sandwich there, there's a dope deli down the street. If I walk down and got a sandwich, like, this would be really good with a sandwich at lunch tomorrow. And it's non-alcoholic. That's even better.
It's a non-alcoholic beer for beer drinkers. I mean, that's what it is.
There you go.
It's a good way to have, like I had one with lunch yesterday. And that's, it's a really good way to have some beer if you can't have beer. But I don't think I would ever choose it over even a bad beer that has alcohol if I'm in a place where it's fine to have a beer.
Okay, I went 6-2 on the Budweiser. That's one of my all-time favorite beers. It's a utilitarian beer. We talked about it. It's a staple. So you've talked me into it, though, and talking this through, I'm glad we talked it through before just putting a rating on it. I'm going to go 5-9.
Okay, yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. You know, I've had plenty of much worse IPAs that are just regular beers.
I've had much worse, yes, 100%. Sometimes you get a really bad IPA, you're like, what were these people doing?
I like their vibe. I mean, the vibe is great, right? Like the whole energy behind them, and the cans look cool, and the names are cool, and they're all very outdoorsy. And like,
I'm into it.
I mean, I'm into it. I'm definitely into it. Like, it's tough though because they cost the same as beer. So it's like, you know, a six pack of this is probably $13.
Well, that's okay. So let's put our biases of why we would want to drink a beer aside. And I think I'm still good with the 5-9. What do you think? What are you gonna? You're gonna give it an 8?
Yeah, I honestly do think it deserves that. I really do.
All right, so to summarize this episode of Gear and Beer, we have the Hoka Mafate Speed 4, which we rated a 5 on the stuffometer. And after you get done ripping around on your local trails, we suggest refreshing yourself with a frosty, cold, Athletic Brewing Free Wave Hazy IPA. It's a mouthful.
I'm fucking sick of these.
Come on now. Free Wave Hazy IPA, with Justin rated a 8 on the beer scale. I gave it a 5.9. And all right, that's any last thoughts?
I'm impressed with both of these products. Like,
right.
Both of these things are things I would normally like to make fun of in my daily life, but good job, Hoka. Good job, Athletic. Good job.
Well, and another great pairing by our Cicerone, because like kind of conflicted on both. Like, the Hoka is a great product, but it's also like, we don't really need it. And then the beer, it's like, this is not what the experience. I was really going to be bummed out. They're like, I don't really like this very much. I am genuinely enjoying
this. It's impressive. They did. It's impressive. It is easily the best non-alcoholic beer I've ever had. Like, there's no question.
High praise.
Yeah.
All right. That's the show for today. What did you think of this edition of Gear and Beer? Do you have a suggestion for a future edition of Gear and Beer? Or do you simply just like Gear and Beer? Send an email to myrockfight@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. The Rockfight is a production of Rockfight LLC. For Justin Hausman, I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening, and here to take us out, he's taking what he's making and spending it on a Saturday night. It's Krista Makes with the Rock Fight Fight song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight!